So we had all gotten together before the academy. We'd been working out together. One of the laterals at the time was, I think he was 50, 52 maybe. Total redneck. I mean, cowboy boots. He was a rancher. We kind of knew that we were going to show up to this academy and it's going to be, okay, let's go. And so we told him, hey, you might want to go put some tennis shoes on and get ready for this. He's like, nah, they're going to give us time to go change before they start kicking our butts. And I'm like, I don't think so. And he's like, oh yeah, we'll be fine. We show up, they start yelling and screaming. They throw a bunch of these PT clothes at us, tell us we got 30 seconds to change. He comes back in and he's wearing the new ISP shorts. He's wearing the t-shirt and he's, you know, those hunting socks are gray and they got the big red thing on the top.
Yep.
He's got those pulled up to his knees, standing in his cowboy boots, getting ready to get PT'd. I remember I got in trouble because I couldn't stop laughing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Love that you guys keep coming back every week. Don't know what the heck's wrong with you, but I do appreciate you. And don't ever think that I don't. I know none of this would be possible without any of you. We're coming up on the end of our fourth year on the podcast. And I say we. I used to have a co-host on here. Most of you know that Morgan still had a day job and they gave him more work, but they offered him more money. Can't fault a guy for dropping out of this for that. So but I just can't came to fix that we thing. Although, those that you listen to me quite a bit, you know, my wife started feeling sorry for him, and now she's doing all the editing of these podcasts. So if you guys sound real good, it's because of her. If you sound like crap, it's because of her. I blame everything on her. Nothing's my fault. I'm the husband, right? Anyway, it's an honor to bring on a super stud guest here again. You can see this young gentleman sitting here with a cute little beard and mustache. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Justin Klitsch. We're going to call him Klitsch because that's what everybody calls him there at work. Justin's a veteran of the United States Coast Guard, so thank you for your service there, brother. He is also still an active state trooper and detective with the Idaho State Police with more than 20 years' experience. So, Klitsch, welcome to the show, brother.
Happy to be here, man. Excited.
Well, let's hope you say that at the end of the show. We'll see how the day goes, right?
You're a legend, brother, so this is cool.
In my own mind, that's it. I tell you, man, my partner Javier and I, we just got back last night from a conference down in McAllen, Texas. And I've never been to McAllen. I don't know what I thought it was, but it's not what I thought it was. What a beautiful place. It's like a 250,000 people down there. We spoke at the Civic Center, and it was as nice as any. Heck, we've been in the Sydney Opry House over in Australia, and it was as nice as that.
Oh, wow.
The people were just fantastic. I mean, they make you want to go back. I guess that's a good compliment to give them.
Oh, that's awesome.
So any of the folks that are listening down there, thank y'all for it. It was the South Texas All Hazards Conference. So had first responders from all FEMA, TEMA, police, fire, EMS, everybody was down there. So great trip though. Thank you very much. And some pretty good Mexican food. You're 6 miles north of the border. You might get a little authentic food down there. So for our listeners here, as you know, our next thing up is our small town police blotter. And before we get started, I got to give you our disclaimer. This is a show about crime. We talk about bad people doing bad things, and we talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. Now, we take our stories here on Game of Crimes very serious. We're never going to miss an opportunity to have a little laugh at some of the stupid thing these criminals do out here. And we got two doozies for you today. Klitsch has one here from Idaho, and now you know where I'm coming from, Florida. So, Klitsch, take it away there, brother.
All right, meet Rocky Fisher, the 35-year-old bank robbery suspect, was wearing a T-shirt declaring, "It's all fun and games till the cops show up." When police showed up and arrested him as he exited an Idaho motel, Fisher and Jennifer Balfe, 19, were collared in connection with Friday's robbery of a U.S. bank branch in Cottonwood, Idaho, population 900. They were each jailed on robbery, burglary, and grand theft counts. Investigators reportedly got on Fisher's tail after receiving an anonymous tip that a man matching the suspect's description had been spending wads of cash at a local casino. And that, folks, is why you can't fix stupid.
You know, and that last thing is the key to all of it. I finally got a little cash in my pocket, so where am I going to go? I'm going to go flaunt it in front of everybody, and I'm going to throw it away in the casino.
Job security.
For us, you're exactly right. That's what we say. People used to say, "You think you're ever going to stop the war on drugs?" It's job security. I mean, we got the best job security anybody in the world.
It's true.
So thanks for playing in that, brother. I got one, of course, from Florida. And ladies and gentlemen, actually, there's a show here called Florida Man that talks. There's so many stupid criminals in our state that there's a show about it. So he writes books and everything. So this, I took out the archives of Florida Man. This guy seems to make a habit of starting fights. This time he picked on the wrong guy. 50-year-old Omar Marrero attacked a former MMA fighter with a 14-inch knife. Dumbass move. And you guessed it, it didn't well for the Florida Man. It was around 4 a.m. The former fighter, he's just pulling up in a parking space, and this jerk Marrero, he starts banging on the guy's window with a knife. Now, I know what would happen in my car. I'm pretty sure it happened in yours too, Clitch. Marrero then opened the driver door and tried to cut the guy, tried to cut the MMA fighter. So, as you can guess, things escalated very quickly. Now, this is former MMA fighter Javier Baez. He explains what happened. He said the guy was out there screaming on the phone, literally was fighting for a while with some woman. He tapped on my car window. I told him to leave me alone, and then he came at me with a knife. I told him to leave me alone. I'm calling the cops. I hope he doesn't break my window. When you train so many times, and I believe this, it becomes reflexive, which is why you train. You develop muscle memory. So he said, he goes on to say, once it came to that, it's all instincts. I couldn't do much but react. I've been training my whole life, black belt jiu-jitsu, wrestled in college. I've got 8 pro fights, MMA masters. I've got great training partners. So what happened? Mr. Marrero, he just got a good old-fashioned Southern Florida ass whooping. That's exactly what happened. Baez dodged, instead of Florida Man, they call him Lunging Man. Then he body slammed him and he held him down with his knee until the cops got there. Marrero was charged with burglary, assault, and battery, and also aggravated battery. Dude, find a different line of work because you're not going to make it. Is it? You think you're a Billy Badass? There's always one out there worse than you are. So, anyway, that's it for this week's Small Town Police Blotter. And again, Clitch, thanks for playing along. I know it's kind of silly, but when you talk about crime and criminals, it can tend to be a dark topic. That's why we have to try to put a little humor in this show. And I've actually tried to take this out, and our loyal listeners keep coming back. They're like, Murph, put it back in. We like hearing those stupid stories. And I think we all do. We're just happy it's not us, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Hey, before we get started here in the real interview, I just want to point out this shirt I'm wearing, Refracted Wolf Apparel. Many of you know, Clitch knew who this was when we first logged on here to start the interview. I'm putting this on here because it comes from Tyler Hoover, who's one of the co-hosts on the Anti-Hero podcast. You may have seen my interview on there a month or two ago. Love these guys. They're a hoot. His partner is Brent Tucker. And when you do an interview with them, Brent owns a cigar company, so you get free cigars to smoke while you're doing the interview. That's the part I like. I gave up most of my vices, but that cigar thing, that's one that sticks with me. So just a shout out to the boys over at Anti-Hero Podcast. Thank you for the shirts. You guys know, free is me, free 99. That's Murph. And this was a free t-shirt. So they're going to take the time to send me a t-shirt. I'm going to give them a shout out. All right. Okay, enough of the silliness. Now, who's this guy we brought? Oh, Clitch. Yeah, sorry. I keep talking and you're not. That's not what it's supposed to be about. So just quickly, how we met. If you guys remember on episode 185 that just came out on February 24th of this year, that was Zach Schofstall. And if you remember, Zach was the FBI agent that got screwed over for maintaining his integrity. He did the right thing. He stood up for his people. He didn't cow down to whatever politics was involved. And you go figure it out. If you hadn't heard his episode, go listen to it. He got railroaded out of the FBI and he still doesn't have a job. Fortunately for him, his father had built a company called Sharps Arms, I guess is the name of the company. And if you don't know what a Sharps rifle is, go look that up. That's just like that MMA fighter. It will kick your ass. It's a tough gun, man. That's a buffalo gun. So Zach sent me a message and he said, hey, I got some good buddies out here. And he said, there's an Idaho State Trooper you probably want to talk to. And so he introduced me to Clitch. We got on the phone. I did a little research on him before I talked to him and then got him on the phone. And he sent me some links to videos. And we want to talk about that video here in a little while. You guys know how to do a pit maneuver out in Idaho.
I wouldn't call it a pit maneuver, but yeah. I put an end to it for sure.
Absolutely. And so we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But, man, I mean, when you spun that guy and then, bam, rolled him right over. I even showed it to my wife. She's like, oh, my gosh, I love that. So, all good stuff here. Clitch, what we usually do to get started is tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what's your family dynamics, brothers and sisters, going through school and sports, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I'm a third generation cop. My grandpa was a local PD officer in Central Ohio. Both my parents are Army veterans. They met in the Army. I got married, had me while they were stationed in Indianapolis. They were both MPs in the Army. And then when I was about 6 months old, they moved to Idaho. My mom got a job with the sheriff's office as a jailer, and my dad got hired with Idaho State Police, where he spent almost 30 years working for the same agency I work for now.
What was the attraction in Idaho from going from Ohio to Idaho?
My mom was from Idaho.
Oh, okay.
Dad was from Ohio. And I think Dad had just put a bunch of applications in everywhere, and he liked the idea of the Idaho State Police, even though they only paid like $4.25 an hour. I grew up in a trailer park in southeast Idaho, a pretty rough trailer park. So, I mean, the stories as a kid, I remember at least one time where Dad came down to our rooms, grabbed us all, brought us to his room, only to find out a guy that he had arrested that threatened to kill him had climbed a tree in our yard and was sitting in the tree. And then Dad runs out in his underwear, chases him down, arrests him. But it was something like that every week. I bet you once a week he'd send me, he'd go get my handcuffs. I'd have to run. We'd be at the park. I'd have to run to the house, get his handcuffs, bring him down there so he could arrest somebody huffing pain at the park or you name it.
Wow.
Yeah. At his retirement party, it was kind of funny because one of the guys that worked with him got up and spoke, and they said that Dad was the only person they ever heard check into service and in pursuit at the same time.
So, 10-8, send back up.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I grew up. I never wanted to be a cop. I watched Dad and the sacrifices that the job took and just the sacrifice on a family to do this line of work, as you well know. I mean, to be a good cop takes a lot of sacrifice, and your family suffers because of it. And oftentimes, the kids, they struggle through school. They have relationship issues, all kinds of problems from that kind of lifestyle. But Dad made a big difference. He saved and changed a lot of lives over his career, but it just wasn't something I was interested in. It wasn't until I got into the Coast Guard and then was stationed in Puerto Rico that I kind of got that itch for law enforcement, that kind of run and gun. And I came to the Idaho State Police because Dad didn't want me to come to the Idaho State Police. And I was like, well, I'm going to show you. So yeah. So here I am today now after almost 20 years. So
just to back up a second, they're talking about our families. That's, I refer to them as the unsung heroes.
Absolutely.
Because the kind of the mercy of what we do, whether we're doing it out because we want to help our family man, or we just want an exciting lifestyle.
Right.
And it's a little bit of both there. I mean, to be honest, and we all enjoy that excitement, that adrenaline rush and taking down bad guys, but they don't get the credit. They never get the credit they deserve. So big shout out to the families of law enforcement, military, and all first responders.
100%.
Putting up with our crap and letting us go do what we think is the right thing to do. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you think it is too, because we are helping our fellow man. I want to ask you, why did you go to the Coast Guard? What was that all about? Or Wayne, let's go back to high school, first of all, because you're not a little man. How big are you?
I'm 6 foot.
And you look bigger.
I've eaten a lot of donuts.
Maybe those
over
other
years.
Hey, trademark of a good cop. Never saw a donut shop we didn't like. But I saw pictures of you. Those must have been some short guys you were standing with, because you're taller than everybody else in those pictures. Don't tell them I said that.
The water in Idaho makes them short.
But did you play any sports in high school? Did that help keep you out of trouble?
Yeah. So I played football, basketball. I played all the sports. Football was pretty much the only one I was consistent with and loved and had a passion for. So yeah, that's really the sport I loved. I grew up and I went to high school in Southern Idaho. And then my senior year, I ended up going to Ohio with my uncles, who are also both cops at one point in their lives. One of my uncles retired, took a medical retirement from an agency in Ohio. Anyway, mm-hmm. I went out to Ohio, was kind of struggling my senior year. And went out there with my uncles and ended up graduating in Ohio from high school out there.
So got a scholarship to play college football. I know. I'm being a smart ass. I'm sorry. But how did you select the Coast Guard out of all the branches of the military?
So my uncle was in the Coast Guard. He was actually a pretty high level enlisted person in the Coast Guard. So I had a little understanding of the Coast Guard and what they did. And at the time in 2001, this was right before 9/11, I wanted to go into a branch that was active and doing some things that I didn't want to sit around and just wait, you know, like, and train for what may happen. Mm-hmm. And I knew the Coast Guard, you'd be thrown into work right away. You'd be doing the mission set right away. But that appealed to me. And if we'd only known that 9/11 was going to happen, I might have taken a different route. But shortly after boot camp, I got shipped to Kodiak, Alaska, on a ship up there. Christ. Yeah, it was actually an awesome experience, except I wasn't 21, so I couldn't drink. And you got to be Brad Pitt to get laid. So there's not very many women up there, but a little tough for an 18-year-old kid. But went up there, and then shortly after I got up there, we're sitting on the mess deck. It was about breakfast time in Kodiak, and drinking coffee and eating some breakfast. And that's when the TV screen had the planes going into the towers, and the Coast Guard changed. From that day on, it wasn't the same. I remember we got called back to the ship, got underway, and then we sat in the harbor of Kodiak protecting I don't know what, but we felt like we had to do something.
Right.
Yeah, that was a game changer, changed our whole mission set, and it was a pretty active 5 years after that. So
yeah, it's funny how everybody remembers where they were on 9/11, yep. 2001. Yep. And I got to tell you a funny story because you'll appreciate it. I'd just gotten to our special operations division up in Washington, and we're at this secret facility out in Lorton, Virginia, down off I-95. And I'm like the token Southern guy there. Everybody else is from New York, New England, a couple guys from LA. And here comes the country bumpkin from West Virginia and Tennessee, transferred in from Atlanta. And my boss was from Long Island. He was what we call assistant special agent in charge. You know what an ASAC
is.
Yeah. And so we go in his office and we're watching it. We're watching the towers. And I mean, it's spooky. And then we see the second plane hit. And then we hear the Pentagon gets hit. And then we hear about the plane in Pennsylvania. And so our big boss came out and put out to the second level bosses, all right, let's get security out in our building here just in case, because things were just going crazy in D.C. And we were probably 15 to 20 miles south of D.C. at that time, D.C. proper. So our bosses kind of said, all right, everybody, we're gonna do shifts in the parking lots around here. Who's got a gun? And out of, I don't know, 80, 90 agents, I think there were four of us that had our guns with us.
Oh, wow.
Well, here's the funny part. We're located, and we're not in that site anymore, so I can tell where the site is now. It's in Lorton, Virginia, right across the road from the aviation fuel tanks for National Airport. So if they want to hit a target and they hit those tanks, we're vaporized.
No matter if you have a gun. There,
see somebody come by going, pew, pew. But, I mean, just funny stories. It was that same responsibility. You guys wanted, your bosses are wanting to participate. You're wanting to get involved, but you don't know how, so you do what little thing you think might help. What a time. I mean, just thank God we got through that safely.
It sure was crazy, and I'd like to say we learned our lesson, but I'm not sure. It's scary. It's scary what's coming in and what mm-hmm. we're facing.
How quickly we forget.
Yeah, I think that's the number one threat to our to law enforcement is just we're so inundated with the drugs and other crimes that we just don't have the time to focus and be prepared for if something happens like that again. It's just unfortunate, but it's just the reality of the situation we're in and the time and the lack of manpower we have. You know?
Yep, that's absolutely right. And then we got these idiots that are to fund the police. Yeah. What a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't care what race you are. I don't care what political party you are. I don't care if you're male, female, or you pretend to be something else. I really don't care. But if that's what you believe, please go live in a third world country. Find out what life is without law enforcement, and then see if you want to come back.
Yeah, 100%.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. So how long did you stay in Alaska before you headed? You mentioned Puerto Rico.
So I got out of there as fast as I could. So I actually, when I went to Alaska, I didn't have a job. I was what they called a non-rate, which they send out from boot camp out into the field, and you can kind of get an idea of what jobs there is. And so I learned which job was the fastest to get out of, to get to a school so I could get a job. And it was actually it was a quartermaster job, which basically they run all the navigation for ships at that time. So I went to that school, and as any, your decisions you make as a kid, it's just crazy. But so at the school, at the end of it, you get several choices on where you want to go. And I picked Puerto Rico. And the sole reason I picked Puerto Rico is you only had to be 18 to drink.
Priorities, brother.
Yeah. So I went to Puerto Rico. I was stationed on two different 110-foot patrol boats down there, which at that time was our fastest ship. And it was just counter-drug and counter-immigration operations nonstop. And, of course, with 9/11, the security was our highest priority. So we were underway a lot and had a great time. It was such a great place to work and learned a lot about myself and met my beautiful wife down there. We've been married for 22 years now.
Congratulations. So,
yeah, it was an awesome experience.
Is she Puerto Rican?
She is.
Do you speak Spanish now?
Enough to put you in handcuffs.
Do you know when she's fussing at you in Spanish?
Well, if she's talking to me in Spanish, I'm in deep trouble. So I don't even need to understand what she's saying. I know I'm in trouble.
Do you guys get to go back to PR very often to visit her family, things like that?
So once we moved back to Idaho, shortly after her family moved out here, in fact, her whole family, her brother moved out here, joined the Army. And then after the Army came to live with us, her mom actually lives with us, which is what a blessing. If you know anything about child care these days, having her here, it's just been awesome. It's great for the kids. And then her dad lives in southern Idaho. So her grandparents still live down there. We've made a couple trips back there, but we've kind of found a love for Costa Rica. So when we go on trips, we like to go down to Costa Rica.
Beautiful down there.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Man, you got both oceans. You got rainforests. You got volcanoes. It's beautiful.
It is.
Except in San Jose. Did they ever put street signs up on the corners in San Jose?
You know, I haven't been to San Jose. I always have flown into Liberia, so I haven't had to go that far south. But
we went there TDY when we were in Columbia, and you know, they told us, listen, when you're driving, don't look for street signs because they don't exist. When you get directions, they're going to go down to the third right, White House on the right, look for the big oak tree. That's where you hang a left. Go around a circle. It's crazy. Yeah. And they were right. Yeah, that's the way it was back then.
Yeah.
Now, did you also do some time on driving the smaller boats there?
Yeah. So during that time I was in Puerto Rico, my job actually kind of merged it with, you had two choices. You could go and be a boatswain mate, which is basically the coxswains and the people that drive the boats and the people that do most of the law enforcement, or you could go and be sit in a radio room. So I chose the boatswain mate route. And so I'd been in Kodiak and then I'd been in Puerto Rico, and in the Coast Guard, that's considered overseas because that's their only two overseas locations. And so I was supposed to get my first pick. So I put all West Coast stations, and I really wanted to go to Coos Bay. And I remember I was actually in Louisiana, and I'm sitting at a table. My captain's at one end, I'm at the other end. And he's like, hey, I got your orders for where you're going next. And he gives it to me. And it said Michigan City, Indiana. And I didn't even know there was water there. And I was so pissed off. I was eating this shrimp poor boy, and I chucked it, barely missed hitting him in the head, and it hit the window behind him. Because at the time, I was upset. He knew where I wanted to go, and I expected him to fight for me to get to where I wanted to go. And he thought it was funny. And I didn't think it was so funny. And then he agreed to go to bat for me and try and get it changed. And then I'm like, well, if you go to the detailer who assigns these and complain, he's probably going to send me to who knows where, New York City, or I said, no, I'll just go there. And it actually was a great decision. We loved it there. It was on Lake Michigan. I got to further my law enforcement experience there. It was obviously different, but I remember, I think I got like a couple ounces of weed off a boat one time, and I thought I was this big drug interdictor. And
yeah, man.
But it was a great experience. And then at the end, I had a choice. I got assigned to a recruiting station in Boise, so I had a choice to go there or get out. And I'd already had several applications out all over the country. And the day I got off active duty, I actually started with the Idaho State Police. So,
wow, really?
Yeah.
That quick?
Yeah, the timing was. Yeah, it just worked out that way.
Well, you probably had some terminal leave time to take, right?
Yeah, I had a month and a half or so. But yeah, the timing was perfect, so I guess it was meant to be.
And did Dad fight you at that point because he didn't want you to join?
Yeah, he just, all the cops are notorious for only thinking about the negative, right? So
yeah,
he just thought about the negative with the agency, which every agency has their problems. It's not an agency problem. It's a leadership problem, really, is what it is. But thankfully, a lot had changed from when he had come up the ranks. And yeah, it's been a great agency. They've been great to me. It's been a great experience. Yeah, I've had every opportunity that you could possibly imagine. Idaho supports law enforcement. Our agency doesn't pay a lot.
Nice.
But they really take care of us equipment-wise and training. And Yeah, it's a very professional agency. So I've been fortunate to, for the most part, just have a ton of fun and kick some butt out there.
What year was it you joined them?
2006.
Just update my notes here a little bit. I don't know why, just because I'm anal retentive. My wife says I'm not anal. She says I'm an asshole. She's probably right. So.
And my wife says the same thing.
You know, it's funny that you talked about going to Indiana, and I like the way you termed it afterwards, that you were fortunate, because I don't believe in luck and I don't believe in coincidence. I believe things happen for a reason, to be quite honest with you. For whatever reason that was, it seems like it worked out well for you.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some lifelong friends because of that. In fact, every year, bunch of the guys I was stationed with in Indiana, they all fly out here to Idaho and we do a 2-week elk hunt. So,
wow.
Yeah. And it's, we've all over the, you know, the past 22 years, we've all gone our separate ways and found our careers and, but we've all had an impact on each other, in one way or another. One of them works for customs. Another one, he was the hardest working guy I'd ever worked with in the Coast Guard, but he had no motivation to move through the ranks. He just wanted to do his time and get out, and he really didn't have a plan. So I remember when I got hired with ISP, I brought him out to Idaho, and he went to power lineman college, and now he's making triple what I make. Yeah. But we all had a positive impact on each other, and you know, you need those friendships. So had I not gone to Indiana, I wouldn't have those friendships that, that changed my life and helped me through the dark times and keep me motivated and support my family. So yeah, it's been a real blessing to have had that experience for sure.
Yep. I'm with you, brother. As a Christian, I believe the good man upstairs has a plan for all of us.
100%.
That's why I don't believe in coincidence and luck.
No.
And we all say it. I say it on emails. Good luck in your assignment or whatever. Knowing I don't even believe in it, but it's just terminology, I guess.
Yeah.
So where are you at in Idaho to go through their state police academy?
That's down in Boise.
Boise, okay. And how long is your academy?
At that time, it was, they've since changed this, but you would go through the Idaho Police Officer Academy. So you'd go with all the other agencies, and I think that was 10 weeks at the time. And then after that 10-week academy, then you'd go to the Idaho State Police Stress Academy, which was another 12 or 16 weeks. So it's a long time, to get through all those academies. Now we just do it all in house. So they don't go to the Idaho Post Academy. We've got our own, academy, which I'm not a big fan of, because those relationships you build with those allied agencies going through that initial police academy last a lifetime. I can't tell you how many times that those relationships have helped me over the years. But it is what it is. I don't get to make those decisions. So I went to the Stress Academy. The Police Academy was super easy, chill. And then I thought boot camp was difficult. That Stress Academy was something else. I mean,
The Basic Academy, did you have to live there at nighttime?
Yeah. We lived on post during both academies. During the initial one, you got a lot more freedom and you can kind of go out at night and stuff like that. But then you're welcome to ISP with zero freedom and a lot of running. Yeah.
You belong to me now. Yeah. What time of year was it that you were at the Stress Academy?
It was winter.
You guys get cold winters, don't you?
Yeah, you're hosed either way. It's either hotter than heck because Boise's down in the desert, or it's colder than heck in the winter. So I'm not sure which one's worse, but it's going to suck regardless. I don't care. It could be the perfect weather. Yep. It's going to suck. So yeah.
Did you get weekends off?
Towards the latter half of the academy, I think we got some weekends off. Man, that was so long ago. It's hard to, and I try and forget about most of it, honestly. But yeah, it was definitely a challenge. I wasn't quite expecting it to be, because you'd gone through boot camp. And I think the biggest thing with boot camp is you got 80 people from across the country and there's always going to be a couple idiots, right?
Oh, yeah.
They take all the attention. Well, at ISP, these were all squared away guys and it was equal attention to everybody. So, yeah. So
how many guys were in your class?
I think there was about 15 of us. Lost a few the first week, as is pretty common. We always lose a few the first week. And then we after the first week, I think everybody kind of made it through and all kind of took different paths. Looking back on it, because you still work with these guys around the state. I think a lot of them have left our agency. Every one of them's promoted. Yeah, it was a good group of guys.
Was there any women in your class?
We had one, but she disappeared the first night. It was crazy. I don't think she told anybody or anything. She just disappeared. So, yeah.
I went through the West Virginia State Police Academy originally back in 76, but then with DEA, and the State Police Academy was a live-in academy. You got to go home on weekends, and DEA, after 5 weeks, you got to go home on a week, or you could have a little bit of freedom like you're talking about, but we would have people that you'd wake up and go to class the next day after PT or something, and they got these tiered classrooms. There'd be an empty seat and the name tag's gone. It's like, what happened to him? What happened to her? You don't need to know. It's a need to know. We had one guy in our class. He was massive. He's a big man. He looked like a bodybuilder, broad shoulders, just toned, six-pack. Oh, boy, I got the keg here. He's got the six-pack going. And when it came to academics, he was scoring the top end of class. And then we went to the range. His profession was a chemist. And we're all wondering, what the hell are you even doing here to be an agent? He didn't know that we carried weapons. Yeah, so, we'd been in it for a couple of weeks when we come to class one day and he's gone. He's like, that was going to be our number one student. Nope. Unbelievable.
Yeah, some people just aren't cut out for this. I mean, it's just the fact of the job. And it doesn't mean they're bad people. It takes a different kind of mindset and different skill set to get through this job, for sure.
It does, and it helps if you got a few screws loose up here, too. Like, when I shake, I hear water, dirty, muddy water up there. But do you think, were they equally tough on everybody, or you think your dad might have made a phone call?
No, I think they were, I know they were a little bit easier on us that were veterans, because they knew we'd already been through the head games, and we'd already been through this once before. They were still hard on us, but if you weren't a veteran, in fact, I remember day one, you'll get a kick out of this, day one. We were a pretty tight group, so we had all gotten together before the academy. We'd been working out together. We had plans. We were organized. We were ready to go.
Right away.
Except two of the folks were laterals, so they never got to really join us on anything. So they show up. We meet for breakfast the morning we're going to the academy. One of the laterals at the time was, I think he was 52 maybe, 50 or 52.
Oh.
Total redneck. I mean, cowboy boots, the whole, he was a rancher. And we kind of knew that we were going to show up to this academy and it's going to be, okay, let's go. And so we told him, we said, hey, you might want to go put some tennis shoes on and get ready for this. And he's like, nah, they're going to give us time to go change before they start kicking our butts. And I'm like, I don't think so. And he's like, oh yeah, we'll be fine. So anyway, we show up, they start yelling and screaming. They throw a bunch of these PT clothes at us, tell us we got 30 seconds to change. And he comes back in and he's wearing the new ISP shorts. He's wearing the T-shirt. And you know, those hunting socks are gray and they got the big red thing on the top.
Yep.
He's got those pulled up to his knees, standing in his cowboy boots, getting ready to get PT'd. I remember I got in trouble because I couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. I didn't care what they were going to do to me. I could not stop laughing. It was just so funny.
Now, that would have been a picture.
It was something I'll never forget. But
that's hilarious.
He still works for us. He's, I guess, 72 now, 70 or 72.
Oh, he made it through, huh?
Oh, yeah. He was a stud. Yeah. But
he'd never lived that story down.
No. We still get together. We laugh about that. So, for sure.
Well, in law enforcement, we always remember the worst about each other. We don't remember the good things.
No. We like to eat each other up, for sure.
Yes, we do. But nobody else could pick on us.
No, true.
That's all in-house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord. I got to catch my breath here. That's hilarious. I can just see that guy. Got those red rings around his socks.
Yeah.
I can see one of those instructors walking, boy, you ain't from around here, are you? That's hilarious. How many sworn officers are there on the Idaho State Police?
I think we're between 300 and 400. Man, we've lost a lot the past year and a half. So we're probably in that low 300s, I would guess.
Do you know how many they're authorized to have?
I think it's right around 400.
Which is not a lot for a big state. Like, I really don't know how big Idaho is.
Yeah, I mean, geographically, it's large. Our population's about 2 million people. We have the same amount of troopers as we've had 30 years ago. So we've never really grown. Yeah. It's a very conservative state, so they're pretty conservative with money. But yeah, we haven't been able to keep up, obviously, with the population and our pay. We've had some pay problems keeping people, but I think that's getting addressed and they're trying to get that under control, because Washington State Patrol has taken several, like 10 of our guys the past couple months. But they go from $35 an hour to like $70 an hour immediately. So that's significant. And we're never going to make that kind of money. And I'm okay with that because the quality of life in Idaho is definitely better than Washington. So there's got to be some give and take there, but they're working on it. I hope they can get it fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. I read when I was doing research on it, I saw where there's 700 people that work for the Idaho State Patrol, but you could tell that includes staff and secretaries and everybody.
Yeah.
So that's not a whole lot of people, man.
No, we're, I'm one of the bigger offices. We have six offices across the state, and each office has a investigations unit and a patrol unit. So the Coeur d'Alene area is our second largest office. Boise's obviously our largest down in the capital city, but we got a pretty decent crew here and we've been able to keep people here, but, you know, that Washington State Patrol pay is just, if you're a young guy, it's almost dumb not to take the.
Yeah. It's like a magnet.
Yeah. You got to seriously consider it if you're young.
I've gotten to meet the chief here in Orlando, Orlando City Police. He came up through the ranks, Eric Smith, just super guy. He's agreed to come on the show and give me an interview. He's just getting on his schedule is pretty tough. And so when I'm talking to him, he's talking about how big your agency is, 900 officers. I said, well, how far down are you? And he's like, well, believe it or not, we're only down, like, I think at the time, 18 officers. And I'm like, oh, really? And what he's doing is advertising in Washington State and Oregon. And they're giving them enough money as a bonus to cover their moving expenses to get them to Orlando. If you're a sworn officer out there, you go through an abbreviated academy here just to learn Florida laws and so forth and OPD policies and procedures. And then you're right out on the street and it's working.
No, that's smart. That's good leadership there.
He's a very impressive man. Yeah. I saw on LinkedIn one time where at least one night a week, he'll come out and go patrol with either the evening or the midnight shift just to get to know his people more, to show support for what they're doing. He answers calls with them. I mean, he's not the lead answer, but he'll show up on site with them while they're doing things. If they get in trouble, he'll show up. He's a big man, former football player, college football player. They have a audiovisual department at their department, and they put out a nice video of that. Man, I reposted it. I think last time I looked, I had like 45,000 hits. Just saying, this is what leadership looks like. This is leadership from the front, not sitting in the ivory tower telling everybody what to do and not facing any of the dangers. So I just got the utmost respect for Chief Eric Smith here in Orlando. True leader of men.
This goes to show, you know, leadership's the most important thing in law enforcement. It really is. Mm-hmm. And without good leadership, the public suffers, the employees suffer, crime goes up. I mean, you name it. It's just like anything, but especially in law enforcement, you got to have solid leadership. And, you know, I wish there was a lot more quality leadership out there. And I wish they took it more serious, but I'm pretty fortunate to work for a good agency that has great leadership. But there's also been times where we didn't have such good leadership and you just watch just everything collapses and, but
yeah, it's cyclical. Funny thing here in Orlando, this is a liberal city. Orange County, where Orlando is located, is a liberal county. And we got Governor DeSantis is very red, and this is a blue county. But the citizens here support the police department as well as the city council. They don't always agree on everything, right. But Chief Smith, he stands up for his department. He stands up for his people. Every year they have their Blue Line Gala, which is a big fundraiser to help law enforcement officers that are in need through traumatic events or a death in the family and things like that. It supports Orlando Police and then Orange County, Seminole County, and Osceola counties. And I got to be the keynote speaker for that. And I don't mean to brag, but I am bragging because I was so proud to do that. And over 1,000 people in the audience, they play the little trailer from the Narcos series on Netflix, just get everybody's attention. And then this old man comes out. I thought, well, you was expecting the actor, weren't you? Sorry, you got me. But there had been a male-female partners on OPD who had gone on a traffic stop. And the guy came out and lit them both up, hit them both, took them down. He was wanted for murder down in Miami. They didn't know it. So he ran, SWAT team comes out, and they take care of business before the night's over. But those two officers were off for a long, long time recuperating, both very young. And the male officer, they said the only reason he survived, his mom, said the only reason he survived is because he was in tip-top physical condition. Plus, he got a positive mindset and all that. And the young girl, her whole family, I met her dad, a couple uncles, some cousins. They were all OPD. So she got the support system like you wouldn't believe. But I got to meet them there. And I recognized, I didn't really know they were there because I thought they were still off injured. But I got to meet them. Man, just what an honor to meet these guys. And their frame of mind is, I can't wait to get back on the job. Right. Oh, it just makes you so proud of what they go through. And I'm not sure how I got off on that tangent, but the city here, even though it is somewhat liberal in the county, they do support the law enforcement agencies here. So
that's
awesome. I really respect that. Yeah, good people. Sorry to get off on a tangent but I got to promote cops everywhere. I was a cop for 38 years. I don't know how to do a whole lot of other things. Well, I make an interview out of myself on a podcast, but I do that on stage too. I was going to ask you to give us a funny academy story, but I don't think you could beat the guy in the socks and the boots.
No, you can't beat that one. And just to start it off like that, it was,
I'll start laughing again. We'll be here for 3 more minutes. Just wait for me to stop laughing. When you're ready to graduate the academy, do you get to fill out a wish list of where you'd like to be stationed?
So when they hired us at that time, we knew where we were going. And initially I was going to South Central Idaho, a town called Twin Falls. And during the academy, there was actually some openings in Boise, where my dad was stationed as well. And so a couple of us got to stay in Boise. So I knew before I graduated that I was going to be in Boise.
I'm gonna wipe the tears out of my eyes from laughing so much.
That's a good problem.
Oh, yeah, man. We've had some real winners on here. So we really had some studs on here. I'm real proud of this show, the people that agree to come on. So you get there, and do you have like a field training officer you have to work with for a while?
Yeah, so our field training was 3 months. I had 3 different field training officers. Once I got through that 3 months, then I was out on my own as what we consider a district car or a metro car in the Boise area.
And are you working in the city, or do you guys primarily work outside the cities?
So a little bit of both. Down there, the interstate running through Boise takes most of our attention between the crashes and all the traffic. And it was a really good experience because it's basically between the officer, critical incidents, the shootings, the amount of crashes, the amount of criminal investigations, you're getting double, quadruple what some of these guys in smaller areas are getting. So you're really advancing fast and getting those experiences. I remember, and I'm pretty sure he did it on purpose because he knew what was going to happen next. But as a fairly young troop, I think at the time we were short back then as well. There was I had another partner on my team and we had a sergeant. So there was 3 of us. And of course, you know how it is. You got 3 of you, only one's working usually.
Wait, but that's a state road.
Yeah.
But got in a
pursuit with a gal, and I don't remember what she had done to start this pursuit. I think it was a robbery or something. Anyway, we chased her several miles at high speeds. And anyway, one of our older troops ended up spiking me as I'm chasing her. And he ended up spiking a deputy that was behind me too. And I remember me and the deputy both pulled over. He got 2 of his tires spiked and I only got 1. And I'm changing my tire and he's changing his tire. And then he comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, you got another spare tire?" I said, "Who hauls around 2 spare tires? No, I don't have another spare tire. Come on." And about that time we got up and rolling, she had stopped and tried to hijack a semi truck and ended up, some of the deputies ended up shooting her, but I'd only been on about a year. And I remember her in the ambulance after she'd been shot and crying for her mom. And I remember looking in the bottom of the ambulance. I'd never seen it before. And I don't know if I've ever seen it since, but there was a bag of meth that had fallen out of her pocket and it had a purple hue to it. So it was tinted methamphetamine. And I just remember like that was kind of a game changer for me. It was emotionally her crying for her mom and then seeing that meth on the ground. I kind of knew that I was going to take that route of chasing these criminals down. She ended up dying on the way to the hospital, but it's those little things, those little experiences, and Boise offered a lot of those experiences.
What was she?
I think she was probably 25, 30, fairly young.
What kind of women you guys got out there in Idaho that are running from the cops and skyjacking or hijacking them?
We got it all, man, just like anywhere.
That's a tough woman.
Yeah, for sure. It'll turn anybody into a beast. So
yeah, unfortunately, we just experienced an issue with that in our family. It's just devastating. It's unbelievable what the drugs are doing to our country. I told you we were just in McAllen, Texas, and after we did our presentation, we did these individual breakouts for Q&As and got an opportunity to get with smaller groups of people and answer their questions. And it could be anything about our careers, investigations we worked on, the narco series, our families, things like that. And when people ask me about what my opinion is on the war on drugs or the fentanyl crisis or whatever the drug crisis is, I tend to get up on my little soapbox and don't go around and offer it. But if you ask me, I'll tell you. And my partner, Javier, if we start talking about legalization, he's like, oh my God, don't ask Murph about legalization. Don't ask him unless you got 2 hours.
Look, it impacts every walk of life. You just mentioned you've got, you know, something that's happened in your family. I've had it in my family, and the fentanyl has really touched people. Everybody is hit by this, you know, crap, and I don't care mm-hmm. which drug it is. You know, they all have some are probably worse than others, but you know, it's destroying our community. It's destroying our families. Right. And it's just, the stuff's so potent now. It's, even if you got a person that wants to get clean, it's a lifelong battle to stay clean. And,
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not just getting clean and you're done.
Right.
That desire continues, even though you are clean.
100%. Wow. Yeah, the rest of your life, you're going to be wanting that hit, you know?
That's a good point. And here I go on a tangent, but I think I know you'll understand. I hope you appreciate this. The war on drugs has never been taken seriously. No. I mean, we throw a Band-Aid on it, basically. And I'm a real big proponent of educating children at the very youngest age. And I mean, before they even start school, to the dangers. Mm-hmm. And I gave an example because that was one of the questions I got asked. And I said, I had I've got 5 granddaughters. One of them was visiting us in Florida, and we live on a small lake. And every once in a while, an alligator will swim up, and our backyard is sloped down. So we could get in the house before he could ever get to us. It's a good little distance. But I'm talking to her about Alex. She's about 5 years old then. And you know how kids are. They're innocent, and they'll say what's on their mind. And she said, if that alligator comes up here, Pops, I'll smack him right on top of the head. I said, baby, let me tell you a little bit about alligators. And by the time I finished, she was up in my arms, and she's like, Pops, can we go inside now? And I scared the crap out of her. But you know what? She knows to stay the hell away from alligators now, doesn't
right.
she? So what if we did that on the drug side? I don't know. It's just, we've gotten so permissive in our society. Whatever we're trying is not working.
No, and I think fentanyl has changed the game. I mean, I know, mm-hmm. you know we spend a lot of time going to schools now. We've really, really amped up our program as far as fentanyl goes. And, you know, we're talking to young kids, and I know it's been successful. And I mean, I've always looked at this job. If you can just impact or save one life, I mean, you've done more than most people will ever do.
Yep.
And you'll never know. That's the thing about this job. You never know who you've impacted or what lives you've changed, or, you just got to keep trucking and have that attitude of making a difference every day.
Let me just ask you this question, because I've started asking all cops this because of the defund the police and the anti-police sentiment that's out there. Did you become a police officer because you wanted to go out and kill people?
No, that's ridiculous.
Thank you. We did it because we wanted to go help people. Sure. It's not like you get to deal with the professionals in business and the clergy, the house moms. You're dealing with the worst of society. And then, of course, they know they can get a sleazy attorney and they can make all kinds of accusations against us. And that's how police get a bad rep. Whether it's true or not, the media exploits that.
Well, and I can tell you, over my career, I probably had 10 to 20 situations where I could have shot my firearm and killed somebody. We'll talk about one of these incidents where I decided not to do that. But I personally, and I know most officers are like this, you've got to take it to the very edge where I'm almost willing for you to shoot me first before I'll shoot you to make sure that I'm making the right decision. And you can call that indecisive or whatever you want, but I think all cops have this moral compass in their head that we don't want to take somebody's life. Unfortunately, sometimes we're faced with that situation and we have to, but I mean, I've always tried to err on the side of caution, give that person every benefit. It's worked out for me, fortunately, but to make that statement's ridiculous and it's not truthful. And if somebody's going to listen to that and buy into that, and we're going to lose trust with somebody over something that's so stupid that you can't even defend making that statement.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just promoting that as much as I can because I know cops. Yeah. I know cops all around the world, and they all do it for the right reason.
Right.
Do we get a bad apple occasionally?
Right.
Yes, we do.
Right.
But so do doctors. Yeah. So do preachers. So do professional business. And name me an occupation that doesn't have a bad apple in
it,
because I don't think you can.
No.
Hey, gang, this is the end of part one. Part two comes out tomorrow, and you certainly don't want to miss that. In the meantime, just a reminder that Game of Crimes is now posting interview videos on YouTube. You can find those and you can subscribe at Game of Crimes Podcast. Our website is gameofcrimespodcast.com. where you'll find all our episodes, our guest book list, and more. And for more content, join us on patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I have several monthly episodes that range from silly to serious, so come on over and join the fun. In the meantime, everyone stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow for part 2.